In the new documentary, The 12 Disciples of Nelson Mandela, Benjamin Pule Lenine describes his arrival in the United States.
We came here during the Vietnam War. We were involved in the activities of students, especially at Lincoln University. We can say that we finally changed the structure of the black student organization to manifest literally black aspirations. We met a lot of people in different fields of the political sphere. We met Muslims, we met the Panthers, and Martin Luther King.
Pule Lenine was a South African anti-apartheid activist. Lee, as everyone called him, was among the first wave of exiles to leave South Africa in 1960 to build support for the African National Congress. They thought that perhaps after several weeks, several months maybe, they would return to work for liberation. Most of them, it was decades for most of them before they returned. Some never did. Lee eventually landed in New York City, where he married and became a stepfather. Thomas Allen Harris is an American filmmaker and was Lee's stepson. He produced the new documentary about his stepfather, 12 Disciples of Nelson Mandela, airs tomorrow night on many PBS stations as part of the POV series. And Thomas Allen Harris joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Neil.
This is in part a history of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, told from the perspective of an extraordinary group of high school friends who left the country more or less at the same time to help build the ANC. Who were they, and what was it they did?
Well, they were the best and the brightest students in a city called Bloemfontein, which is the heart of the Free State. And the Free State is to South Africa the way Mississippi is to America. It's the very conservative, and it was the kind of heartland of the Nationalist Party, which gave rise to apartheid. And so these young men were part of a group of activists that was demonstrating against the apartheid laws, but also more specifically against the Bantu education, which was dismantling the public education for black people in South Africa and replacing it with a kind of training that black people would undergo to serve white South Africans, yeah. For instance, you know, how to cook, how to make a bed, et cetera, et cetera. And these young men, they had dreams and aspirations, and they were also very political. They were part of the African National Congress Youth League.
As the film opens, it really begins with Lee's funeral and with a picture of these 12 young friends that some of them you talk to, they haven't seen, for 40 years?
Yeah, the film started for me at the funeral. I had listened to stories that I'd heard growing up about how they left South Africa in 1960. They were called upon by the leaders to go into the exile and start the African National Congress offices in other parts of Africa, in the Americas, in Europe, and they took a harrowing trip. Took about 6 months to get from South Africa to Tanzania, and from there they started to receive scholarships all over the world, and they really worked tirelessly to set up ANC offices, to tell individuals what was going on and build what became a global movement for the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And these are unsung heroes. These aren't like, you know, guys who had connections or had money. They not only had to be disciplined to keep the movement alive, especially during the dark years of the 1960s and early 70s before Soweto, but also to figure out how to create careers for themselves so that they could keep a roof over their heads and food in their stomach.
And it was at an extraordinary price for many of them. A few died overseas, never got back to South Africa. But your stepfather, for example, you're quite open about the difficulties, the emotional difficulties he had missing his homeland and his problems with alcoholism.
Yes, you know, I think that when they left, they thought they would be able to go back home, you know, in 5 years or less. And as the years proceeded, I think that it was very, very difficult. South Africans are very, very close to their families, and they're very close to the land. And so I think a lot of them, as young men, started using alcohol as a way to kind of soothe the homesickness. And you know, even though he was a you know good family man, and he also he worked for the United Nations Anti-Apartheid Division in the radio department. He couldn't tolerate the alcohol, and that was one of the issues we had later on. Is that he kept drinking even though he was getting sick, but he just couldn't stop.
We're talking with Thomas Allen Harris, director of the new film 12 Disciples of Nelson Mandela, which debuts tomorrow night on many PBS stations around the country. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. The personal story of Lee and your mother and their relationship and your relationship with your stepfather, these are not simple stories.
No, it actually took me about a year to edit the film. You know, I would say I was in therapy for a good 2 to 3 days a week while I was in the editing process. You know, trying to figure out, well, you know, what was the difficulty? You know, was it Lee's drinking? Was it my reluctance to accept him as a father? You know, we would get along, and then all of a sudden, you know, we couldn't get along, and so then on top of this, you had the entire anti-apartheid movement that he was a part of. Mm-hmm. He and the other disciples. Because don't forget that even though they went to all different parts of the world, they still kept in touch with one another. And so to interweave these stories was a major, major challenge. And I was really blessed to be working with Sam Pollard, an editor, amazing editor, as well as Sabine Hoffman. Mm. And Sam has worked with Spike Lee, and he, you know, edited Four Little Girls, and he brought this amazing structure to the film.
We're going to listen to an excerpt from the film. This is you describing how you felt like as a small boy to have Lee as your stepfather.
I was captivated by my mother's new boyfriend, this handsome revolutionary who taught us about the horrors of apartheid in South Africa and Nelson Mandela, his imprisoned president of the ANC. Every night when I went to bed, I would will myself to become invisible, grow wings and fly to South Africa to fight the evil racist.
It is a story of a moment with that childlike clarity where there was purpose, there was meaning, there was a vitality to life. It seemed like the entire movement at one point or another seemed to move through your apartment in the Bronx. Yet one of the most interesting parts of the story is what has happened to these men in the years after liberation of South Africa and the end of apartheid.
Yes, well, many of them who were still alive, who could go home, decided to go back to Bloemfontein, and they chose not to go to Johannesburg or to Cape Town, where their connections would have helped them do much better in life. And they went to Bloemfontein, and you know the struggle still continued in Bloemfontein. You know, while legally apartheid is no longer there, economic apartheid certainly is in place. And so these guys, after you know giving their lives to fight for the freedom of South Africa, went home and, you know, many of them penniless and had to fight to get jobs and to get their pensions. And you know, one of the things I did in the film is I hired young South African actors to recreate the journey that the guys took in the, you know, in 1950s and 60s. And many of these young South Africans did not even know who these guys were. They were both from Bloemfontein. In some cases, they were neighbors, and they had no idea that these guys were local heroes.
There's another extraordinary character in the film, the teacher at the school who encouraged them to stand up and fight, a teacher who is now a member of parliament. And there's an amazing scene toward the end of the film in which she says, I wish I could go back to what I was like then. I had the guts of a lion.
Yeah, I think that the struggle, you know, especially coming at a certain time in their lives, in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, you know, it gave a purpose to their lives. And it was very clear, you know, who the bad guys were and who the good guys were. And, you know, so I think that there was this intense conviction, there was the fight, and people were riding high on that, you know, even though there was a lot of difficulty in terms of, you know, exile, in terms of people who stayed behind and fought in the streets. But you know, there was a certain type of purpose. And so I think that a lot of these folks remember back to that time of clarity. You know, it's hard to, you know, to convey this to the next generation, which is one of the reasons I did this film too, you know, because in South Africa, there's very little information about what happened, you know, in terms of the struggle. Mm-hmm. Before 1976 and in exile, and so young people don't know what the what these guys, men and women, gave up for their freedom.
Very quickly, is this film going to be shown in South Africa?
The film, it has been shown in festivals in South Africa, and hopefully it's going to be broadcast on SABC in South Africa and have a limited theatrical release, as it did here at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
The 12 Disciples of Nelson Mandela airs tomorrow night on many PBS stations as part of the POV series. Thomas Alan Harris, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Thomas Alan Harris, the filmmaker who made that film, he joined us from our bureau in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.